Welcome to the New Diplomas Podcast. As always, I am your host, Garrison Morato, and today I am honored to invite back a longtime friend of the podcast, someone I deeply admire and an expert in the field of the Indo-Pacific, former Ambassador Rajiv Bhatia of India. Mr. Ambassador, it is an honor to have you back on the New Diplomas Podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure for me to reconnect with you. As you know, I'm Rajiv Bhatia. I'm a former Indian ambassador. Presently, I serve as Distinguished Fellow, Gateway House, which is a prestigious think tank based in Mumbai, India. And I'm really very happy that I have the chance to talk to the New Diplomatist and through it to a wider international audience.
Well, it's an absolute honor to have you on again, sir, for this, your third visit on the podcast, and always a pleasure to speak with you. And today, a particular pleasure because we're speaking about an area of great fascination to our listeners as well as to you personally, sir, which is the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, or better known as the Quad, which is the Strategic Intergovernmental Security Forum of four nations in the Indo-Pacific region, which is the United States, India, Japan, and Australia, that together conduct various aspects of coordination, particularly surrounding naval exercises on an annual basis, but also a broader range of subjects. Could you give a little bit of a background of how the Quad came about and what its outlook is currently, its significance in the Indo-Pacific?
Yes, indeed. Perhaps just a couple of lines about the larger region, Indo-Pacific.
Absolutely.
Indo-Pacific is the name of a new construct. Scholars have different opinions as to where it begins and where it ends. But broadly now, there is consensus among American and Indian scholars, and also Japanese and Australians agree that it could be seen to be stretching from the eastern shores of Africa to the western shores of the United States of America. As an American journal said, Indo-Pacific stretches from California to Kilimanjaro, the mountain in eastern Africa. So in effect, we are talking about the maritime Asia, an Asia that is linked by two major oceans, the Pacific Ocean and the Indian Ocean. So here you will see two major common factors. One is that China is obviously occupying a central position in this area, and so is India. So in a way, when we talk about Indo-Pacific, we are talking about the Western presence, particularly American presence, which is getting increasingly contested and challenged by China. And in that larger US-China contestation, the other countries, including India, come into the play. It was in this context that the four governments, US, India, Australia, and Japan, thought of setting up a mechanism named the Quad. It began a few years back when there was major maritime situations here which required coordination among the four navies. But then it lost momentum because one of the members, Australians, were worried that this coordination would annoy China. However, I think from about 2017, when China's assertiveness and aggressiveness began to acquire a very strong dimension, then the motive for coordination and cooperation among the four powers began to get strengthened. And first, there were regular meetings of the diplomats of the four countries. And then from about the end of 2019, there have been three meetings of the foreign ministers that really gave it a very special push. Finally, it culminated in the first ever digital summit of the leaders, president and prime ministers. President Biden hosted it, and that really put the Quad into a very prominent position in the Indo-Pacific. And we are now talking, dear friends, about this only because I think in 3 or 4 months, the first in-person summit of the Quad leaders is likely to take place in Washington. And that would be a major milestone in the evolution of the Quad. And therefore, it may be worthwhile for us to go a bit deeper into the subject and understand as to what is the present state of play.
I'm very glad that you mentioned the term Indo-Pacific, and perhaps we should even start back there again, because that really was a critical point that you made even at the opening, which is maybe talk through the listeners a little bit, that significance of, in recent years in particular, scholars throughout India and the US and Australia and Japan, as you mentioned, beginning to define this region by the term Indo-Pacific rather than, say, Asia-Pacific, which might have been the more common term at one point in time, and how that affects China's feeling towards institutions such as the Quad, which they often decry from Beijing as being designed to constrain China, almost accusing it of being an Asian NATO. Do you think that's a fair description, an Asian NATO, or how does this Indo-Pacific concept interplay with China?
The concept of Indo-Pacific is gaining a great deal of acceptance, but yes, there are countries which have reservations. China is one of them. Even Russia, which is the close supporter and friend of China, would still prefer to use the older term Asia-Pacific. But barring these two, I think most other countries are fairly comfortable with Indo-Pacific, including the 10 member states of ASEAN, which deeply examined the concept and came out with their own statement named as the ASEAN Outlook on Indo-Pacific. So we can say objectively that this new concept has now more or less replaced the older concept, Asia-Pacific. What Indo-Pacific says is two main things. One, you know, we have to watch out what Chinese are doing. China is the big issue here. And the other is the focus is very much on a country like India, which has to be particularly important in terms of the power balance and power calculations. Now, to answer your question, China's description of the Quad as Asian NATO is absurd and it is without any basis. The four member states of the Quad do not have the Cold War mentality, but China has. And therefore, we have to maintain that the Quad's fundamental purpose is to ensure that international law is adhered to by everybody in the region, in the Indo-Pacific region. The country which is truly violating international law and rules-based order is China, through its gray zone activities and often activities which are patently illegal. What China did in South China Sea for the past several years was certified by the international panel to be invalid. So from time to time, the Chinese Navy harasses Philippines, Vietnam, Air Force does it to Malaysia. All these are frankly illegal activities and the Quad is very concerned about this. But at the second level, the Quad has a very positive agenda, and the agenda is, first of all, to expand cooperation on a host of issues within the Quad countries and also between the Quad countries and its likely partner nations in the Indo-Pacific. So, to be very honest, those of us who are outside the government can say that Quad is very much about constraining China, not containing, but constraining China so that China follows international law. But it also has a positive orientation of cooperation that brings more security and peace in the region.
It's a very important delineation, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate that perspective, bring some clarity to that, because there is sometimes competing narratives between the member states within the Quad versus obviously Beijing, who has a very different agenda towards this cooperation. In recent months, the Quad has tackled everything from deepening economic relations to, as you said, strategies to ensure a free and open Indo-Pacific, a rules-based order in the region, and even responses towards COVID, which has obviously had a major impact on each of the four member states. Heading forward, as we head towards that summit later this year, as you mentioned, as well as deeper into the Biden administration, what do you feel is the outlook of the Quad for perhaps opportunities for increased cooperation that have not yet been fully tested? Because as you mentioned, there was a bit of a gap. The Quad originated as an idea 2007, 2008, and then under Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, I believe it was, in Australia, first withdrew, you know, from that group, and there's a bit of a hiatus, as you said, comes back in 2017. It's been building in momentum, I would say. It's fair to describe. What would you say, as that momentum builds into its fourth, fifth year of continual presence, what is the outlook for the Quad for new opportunities to increase that engagement between the four countries?
Yes, I think this outlook centers around four important aspects. First is the political aspect. I think the personal involvement of the top leadership is something very significant. This means that the spirit of the Quad is getting stronger, and this is getting stronger because this is about democracies, about the involvement of the peoples. It is going to work on a very broad agenda which will have the support of the four nations and their peoples. The second is diplomatic coordination. And here the four countries are looking at expanding the convergences among four of them. There's a lot of dialogue under the surface and over the surface that has been going on among the four capitals. And you may have already learned that Secretary of State Blinken is likely to visit India very soon in response to the visit by the Indian External Affairs Minister to Washington just about 2 months back. So this is an indicative of the fact that the ministers are working hard to prepare for the Washington summit. The third is the economic aspect. I think it is very clear to the Quad planners that China's challenge is not just political or diplomatic or security. It is very much about economic and technological long-term challenge. Third is economic and fourth is technological. And on these two aspects, I would like to share with your listeners that our think tank Gateway House has been working with an international task force of experts belonging to these four countries. We are near finalizing a report that is a set of recommendations on how economic and technological collaboration among the four countries can be strengthened, keeping in mind the China threat. And we have no doubt that these will be practical and substantive recommendations, and they will receive serious consideration by the four governments. So effectively, these four aspects are important. One more additional point quickly to add, the Quad per se is not enough to meet with the formidable threat posed by China and its friends. And therefore, the Quad countries are very keen to develop partnerships with other countries under the concept of Quad Plus or Quad Plus Plus. And here, very quickly, two sets of countries come to one's mind. One is ASEAN and countries in South Asia, and the other is some of the countries of the European Union. So you can see that the Quad has very ambitious and very inclusive approach.
Indeed. Well, two quick points in response to that wonderful wealth of information there, which is, number one, I'd be very honored to have you back on the podcast to discuss that report from Gateway House when it is released, because that will be a significant work of scholarship that I know everyone listening to this podcast will be interested in hearing more about. Number two, as you mentioned, Quad Plus as a concept going forward, I would agree, because you see even the French government, President Emmanuel Macron, announcing that he would like the French to be a participant in the next exercise, Malabar naval exercises with the members of the Quad. So even as you said, sir, as far away as Europe, countries are developing an interest in joining this group and cooperating on these various opportunities and meeting these various challenges as well. And speaking of challenges, you did mention in passing, sir, that the Quad in its current form would have to continue to develop and expand to meet not only China, but China's friends. And that reminds me of an article that you published within the last week, a fascinating article in the Hindustan Times entitled Democratic Quad versus China's Quad. And in that, you outline China's beginning efforts to start to coalesce some of its historical partners in the region of Central Asia into potentially counterbalancing force. Could you unpack this China's Quad for our listeners?
Yes. Now, you know, just to let the imagination run riot a little, but in a conscious manner, imagine when, in a few weeks' time, President Biden host the summit in Washington where Prime Minister Narendra Modi, Prime Minister of Australia, and Prime Minister of Japan, they all gather together for a one-day or one-and-a-half-day conference. Imagine if on that very day, President Xi Jinping were to gather together in Beijing, President Putin and Prime Minister of Pakistan and President of Iran. Imagine if this summit is also taking place at that time, what a massive impact it will have on the international relations. Now, to come back to the reality, I'm not saying that that is exactly what is going to happen, but this is to underline our concept based on serious research that China has developed very close partnerships, one-to-one partnerships with these three countries, Russia, Iran and Pakistan. And if Chinese really wanted, and if the other countries agreed, they could quite smoothly form the rival Quad, which can be called the Red Quad or China's Quad. In which case, frankly, the announcement of a new Cold War 2.0 would only be a mere formality. But I do not want to scare the viewers beyond a point, because I do not want to lose touch with reality. I would say while there are close partnerships, there are also difficulties in the relationships of China with Russia, China with Iran, and China with Pakistan. My whole purpose of speculating intelligently and painting this picture of Red Quad is to point out that for the Democratic Quad, it's a very important mission that we watch what the Chinese are doing on the geopolitical chessboard and take actions to ensure, for example, that China-Russia relationship is weakened. Now here, America has a lot of work to do. America simply cannot take on China and Russia together. Prudence demands that some kind of a reset with Russia has to be aimed at. Similarly, India cannot take China and Pakistan together. Therefore, some kind of a reset with Pakistan has to be done. With Iran, also something has to be done. I think the important thing is this. We have to consolidate our unity, that is the Democratic Quad's unity, while making sure that the other group remains weak and divided.
And sir, do you think, further consolidating this line of thought, do you believe, as some scholars have said, that we are truly leaving behind the former post-Cold War era framework where, you know, I think many scholars, Francis Fukuyama often gets, I think, singled out for this, but he was not the only one, you know, proclaimed an end of history, a triumph of democracy, kind of a steady march towards peaceful international relations, and that the era of great power competition had sort of ended. Now, there really aren't too many serious scholars who would assert such a thing just 30 years later. But in this new era of great power competition, as you mentioned, all these intricacies, the India-Pakistan-China triangle, or the America, you know, China-Russia triangle, what do you feel is the best route forward, particularly, sir, given your perspective and background, for India, for New Delhi, focusing in on this new outlook? Because, you know, historically, I think it can be said with fairness that India during the Cold War 1.0, or the original Cold War, if you will, very much favored the non-aligned movement and some balancing acts between East and West to ensure their own security and stability in the region. How do you see India's position evolving as you enter this new period of great power competition? Because it doesn't seem so unaligned this time.
Yes, I think you are absolutely right. And I really appreciate such deeply researched questions that you put, which indicate actually that someday I should be interviewing you. Honestly, you know so much.
I'm very flattered, sir.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I think India works on the assumption that the previous Cold War was different. And if the present situation does turn into a Cold War, it would be different. Both are different phenomena, and therefore they require different strategy. Very clearly, this time the non-alignment cannot work because China is sitting on our borders. Chinese troops have killed Indian troops only last year. China's adversarial instincts and attitude towards India is something that is well known, and it has really inflamed public opinion. So keeping all that in mind, coalition building for India is absolutely essential. Happily, this comes at a time when India-US partnership in the past 20 years or so has moved from strength to strength. And therefore, clearly, India is set on developing closer defense, economic, and political partnership with the U.S. That is a key element of India's foreign policy. The second point is that India is fully aware of the importance of at least one country on the other side, which is Russia. Russia-India relations go back to the very beginning of the post-Cold War period. Russia has close links, and that is the reason why we feel in order to protect our partnership with Russia, it is important that US-Russia relations should improve also. In fact, doing so is in America's interest. Doing so also is in Europe's interest. You know, as long as we agree that China is the main, most formidable threat. Third, I think India remains fully alive to the importance of South Asia. a region where China is trying to intrude diplomatically and economically. So we are giving a very tough contestation to China, country by country, issue by issue, episode by episode. Those of us who are following South Asia are seeing this. And fourthly, in the region east of India, from Myanmar all the way to New Zealand, Indian foreign policy makers are very clear that all those countries which are interested to be partners with India, which are interested to work for democracy and security of the region, which believe in pluralism, which believe in multipolarity, India is there to help them and work with them closely. So this is largely the Indian approach.
Marvelous insight, sir. And I know I want to be respectful of your time, but if I can slip in one more short question with you, sir, sort of a little bit on a tangent from this topic of the Quad, which we could talk about for quite a length of time, but I want to be respectful of yours, sir. I did want to mention, we spoke about the Indo-Pacific stretching clean to the eastern half of Africa, that eastern coast. I did notice through Gateway House, sir, that you are working on your third book. I should mention for listeners, you are the author of two marvelous books already, which I'll post the links for in the show notes, but a third book on India-Africa relations. Perhaps you could give listeners a bit of a sneak peek as to some of those topics as they relate to that eastern coast of Africa, in particular, the Indo-Pacific.
It's very thoughtful of you to raise this. Thank you very much. Africa is a passion with me. I spent 7 years working there. I was India's ambassador in Kenya and later in South Africa. You know, we feel that the world still does not give adequate importance to Africa. Africa is the future. Or to put it differently, the future of Africa concerns the whole world. In terms of population, in terms of challenges that they face, in terms of the progress they have made, I think the world, particularly America, should be according much greater attention to them than actually it is done. As far as my book is concerned, the central point is to portray the unfolding international competition in Africa today. You know, roughly about a dozen world powers are involved in this competition, stretching from Brazil through US, Europe, UAE, India, China, Indonesia, and so on. So in that context, in the context of unfolding international competition, I have studied very closely the India-Africa partnership. We are coming out with a practical roadmap as to how this partnership can be expanded. And certainly, the Quad and Indo-Pacific are the additional tools that are available to the policymakers in Delhi to try to diversify and deepen the India-Africa relationship.
Well, it sounds like an absolutely fascinating book already, and one I know that I personally will be deeply looking forward to purchasing and reading, and I know that our listeners will as well. And unfortunately, I think we're out of time for the day, but I do want to say once again, thank you, sir, Mr. Ambassador Rahiv Bhatia, Distinguished Fellow, Gateway House, and a 37-year veteran of the Indian Foreign Service. As always, sir, an honor to have you on the podcast, and I do hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you very much, my dear friend. You are doing wonderful work, truly, and I wish you all the best in future.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.